This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go. This week, we're talking all about energetic clutter with Tanya Cole Lesnick, who's a wonderful therapist based in New York and a previous guest when we talked all about group therapy in really the most compelling way. Like, I couldn't have been more convinced of group therapy by the end of that. You know, her passion for her work comes across so clearly in that conversation, which I'll link in the episode description, but also very much in today and in this kind of fun, cutting-edge theme, because energetic clutter is a term that she's coined as, by her definition, all the things that demand a lot of our time and energy but don't help us move the needle towards growth and what brings us joy and meaning into our lives. This links to mental health, whatever you're going through, and feels very timely when a lot of people are feeling a kind of overwhelm with external stresses in their life, whether that's to do with the cost of living, whether that's to do with ongoing challenges of workplaces and how in some ways they're kind of evolving and not getting less stressful, let's put it that way, in our modern world. And so I really appreciated this conversation. Also, I'm delighted to share that this special conversation is going to go out the day after our 5-year anniversary of launching this podcast, which I haven't really taken in yet. That feels very strange to say out loud. I had no plans of it lasting this long, and that's not me being down on myself. You know, it was such a kind of big project that we went into it with no expectations of, can we get this off the ground at all? Can we find an audience for it? Will we be able to contribute something meaningful to the broader mental health conversation? And I'm very relieved and delighted to say that we have. And I guess that was very me in that I don't do things by half, that we named it Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health from day one. And it's one of the proudest achievements in my life that we have been able to live up to that. And that's not from my perception. You know, I always want to improve. Pete, my wonderful producer, has to hear kind of tweaks to the format, ideas from me all the time. And so even interviews, you know, I listened back to a year ago, I can still find ways of, oh, I might have done this differently or asked that question slightly differently. That being said, we've won 5 awards. We've got a load of really lovely press coverage. And so I am feeling more confident than ever that we're achieving what we set out to. You know, that other people are seeing it, appreciating it, and bringing these conversations into their own lives, which is all we ever wanted. And of course, those of you that have been around a while will know about the work we've done with mental health education in schools while I was living in the UK as well. And behind the scenes, you know, that still continues. And so I hope to have some more updates there, or potentially, you know, ways in which I am able to broaden that to reforms here in Ireland as well. But for now, I'm going to hold myself back from rambling too much, partly because I'm coming out of a cold. And so I'm not convinced I'm going to sound anything as energetic as I'm feeling right now. Yeah, I literally just had to blow my nose again before pressing record just to be like, can I sound slightly less nasal? Is that accessible to me today? And I guess we'll find out in the edit. With that being said, thank you for all the support over the years. If you want more of the show, if you want extended ad-free episodes, including debriefs with wonderful guests like Tanya, there is the option to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. With those things all mentioned, we'll get into this special episode with Tanya Cole Lesnick in a moment, which I so appreciated. As I said to her off air, it felt like, you know, we were colleagues meeting up to compare notes, as opposed to, yeah, two people that are chatting for the second time. And if that's not an advertisement for how wonderful therapists like her are, I don't know what is. Because being so easily seen and understood even in this, which is not me going to therapy, still has so much power. With that said, let's get into it. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
So I am Tanya Cole Lesnick, and I first came up with this newer thing that I've been focusing on that I'm calling energetic clutter when I was just wanting to take care of some things in my home. There were just a lot of things. And even though you wouldn't think my home looked cluttered, there were things I hadn't looked at in years and really wanted to clear through some of that stuff and only have the things that I really love and I want in my and use in my life. So I was doing a little research. I found somebody that I started to work with as a client, a minimalist. She and I would meet periodically and go through some of what was in the way for me in terms of physical clutter. And in my work with her, I realized how aligned it was in the work that I do with my clients. And it really is a process of helping people start to identify what really matters to them, what doesn't, and then what are some of the stuck places? What are some of the gray areas where it's just not even clear if that's a process that needs to happen, a mental process that's going to support growth, that's going to support movement, that kind of thing. And so I started to call that energetic clutter. And so meaning all the things that really demand our attention and our energy, but that are not the things that we want, that we're choosing, that we love, that help us to move the needle towards our best lives or towards growth even, because obviously not every moment on this planet is going to be fun, even if we're wanting to fully engage and be in alignment and live our best lives. There's still hard stuff out there, and to know which is the clutter and which are the things that are going to help support our growth and what matters to us.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking off air about this being something that I see a lot in my work and with like a lot of my friends and family as well, this feeling of overwhelm that people have, and they're looking at, okay, what in my life can I control and can I prioritize that really makes a difference for me versus a lot of the external stuff that maybe I feel I should be doing this, or I am stressed about this thing with work, but it's something I have no control over. And is not my fault that it's stressful. You know, I think people are yearning for that streamlining, really.
Yeah, I think helping people to identify where is acceptance needed with some of these areas where there isn't control, and where is your energy going to support you? Because if a lot of energy is towards the stuff we can't control, and there's a lot of anger and frustration and stress there in those spaces, we're going to get depleted pretty quickly. And we're not going to be able to move forward in that with that kind of focus.
Yeah. And you know what I'm reminded of? I think there is this bias towards the things that we focus on the most do tend to, you know, take so much of our mental space up and be really draining to us. And I'm reminded of that with like how many colleagues I've had over the years where it doesn't seem to be the ones that complain about their jobs the most that leave. They just find more things to complain about, and that maybe the focus gets kind of stuck there. And then I'm completely the opposite way, where I will stealthily job hunt and then all of a sudden be out. And they're like, oh, I didn't know you were unhappy with it. And it's like, oh, well, I was just starting to get sick of the job. And so that's when I started looking for other work.
Yeah. And I think to know our own patterns and to know it, like in the story that you told, and I'm not having anything to say about your process because I don't know enough of the layers, but that could be something to think about. Like, do I go to a place of growth before I leave, or do I leave as soon as it's uncomfortable for me? What's that about? And getting clear, what are the patterns that serve you? What are the patterns that get in the way for you? What are your patterns overall? You know, mm-hmm. are you somebody, and I know that you are somebody who goes inward and learns about yourself and that kind of thing, but it sounds like you're very proactive about making sure that the work that you're doing is you're connected to and that you feel somewhat in alignment with. I'm sort of connecting all that to the story that you shared.
No, I would take that definitely. And I think it's really important for me. It's been a sort of hard won understanding via certain struggles mental health wise of having to prioritize how do I find some kind of ease through surviving mental ill health. And then as I've kind of gone through recovery and had some really good support, including a lot of therapy, I have got to move more from a place of, okay, I've got to like prioritize what things I can and can't control and what things I, you know, need to fix and what things I can't fix, but need to move mm-hmm. on from, to now a point of like, okay, now I get to prioritize happiness and growth as opposed to survival, you know?
Yes, I love that. And also how well you had to get to the point of knowing yourself to be able to kind of know when you're on the path with that versus when it could lead to negative consequences. And you learn that the hard way. And then it sounds like learned how to take care of yourself in some important ways.
Yeah. And, you know, when I was preparing for this conversation and trying to best understand this term of yours, energetic clutter, what it really got me thinking about is how vital boundaries are with this.
Mm, totally. Yeah, I talk to people all the time about boundaries, saying yes and no, which is also a form of boundaries, but it's a little bit different sometimes. So really knowing what's a full body yes, or even a maybe yes. Sometimes we're not always fully in full body yes mode. When is it okay to change your mind versus when is it something, you know, to honor a commitment? What's going to serve you most of all? And it comes back to really knowing yourself and where you need some growth, where it's going to be important for you to grow. If you're somebody who says no all the time, then it's likely that starting to say yes is going to be an important place to go. But to do that mindfully and to really know, well, what do you personally need in your life and get some clarity about that?
Yeah, I think it's probably worth breaking down, you know, what we mean here around boundaries, because, you know, there is definitely that element of, do you agree to things or not? But the boundaries is the greater context of why you're making that decision. So it's not a one-off yes or no. It's reinforcing ways that you need to be kind of respected or treated in the interests of your mental health, in the interests of your well-being more generally. So, you know, I'm reminded of a friend of mine who lives in a household where she has two siblings that both have young children. And she doesn't. And so often the assumption is, oh, well, you don't have kids, so you've definitely got time to mind mine. And as much as we could go back and forth on whether or not that's logical, you know, for her, that's been a kind of hard won thing of the boundary is, I love my little nieces and nephews, but I also have a life of my own. I also have my own work priorities, my own social life. And so I'm not a kind of on-call nanny all of the time. And so sometimes it is a yes and sometimes it's a no, but it's within that context of you need to respect my time and that I have a life of my own as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think those being able to even identify that and say that, you have to know that about yourself. So this friend that you're referring to, I'm sure, had some period of time being in that gray area where she got super clear about what the boundary was going to be. When are you saying yes and no to things? And that can be tricky. I'm thinking about my own experiences. I've talked in the past about my tendency towards people pleasing and having to learn that about myself, realize that that was in the way for me, and starting to rein myself in. So instead of automatically going to places where I felt like, oh, the other person would be so pleased if I'm accommodating or if I do certain things, and then to realize, oh, wait a minute, that's not serving me, and to take more time to check in. Is this a yes? Is this a no? I had a tendency to be more accommodating with clients' schedules than my own for a period of time. And then I realized that, oh, that's another sign of me being a people pleaser, and I need to honor my own scheduling and know that some times just are outside of the time when I want to be available for other people. And also, I like to be accommodating when it works out. And so finding a way to be able to do both is another example of a boundary where sometimes I do say yes, sometimes I do say no in terms of timing, but I decide, and that I fully check in and make sure that I'm honoring what works well for me and that I'm making the decision, as opposed to sometimes when we do say yes to things we don't want to be saying yes to, we can get irritable, we can get depleted, we can get resentful.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of there, because I've definitely had that experience myself, where there's such a thing as being too flexible around somebody else's schedule. And I don't really believe that anyone wins, because of course there's an impact on you. Maybe you've kind of scheduled something on a day off, let's say, with your work. And then, you know, you don't get to sort of unwind. You have a day where a lot of it is leading up to that session. You know, I think all of us can relate to, like, maybe you have a work day that starts a bit later, and then the whole day is, how many hours do I have left until I'm in? And then, yes, there's that additional element of, okay, well, there's, you know, the prioritizing yourself in your own time is valid on its own. There's the additional layer of that for the sake of the client as well. So you being kind of rested and having a schedule that kind of best serves you being kind of fully present and not distracted and having a routine that works for you is also good for them. And then, like you said, I related to that a lot with the frustration, because if that's the client that ends up cancelling last minute, that's going to annoy you far more than any other client that week. Because then you're like, well, now I have a day off, but I didn't get a chance to plan anything. I could have seen that friend that maybe I wanted to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And as we're talking about boundaries, I'm also thinking boundaries for ourselves too, because we're often talking about it with other people and boundaries we need to set with other people. But yeah, boundaries that we can even set. One that's just coming to my mind, I've been talking about this recently as well, is just, you know, we can all have an inner critic that has something to say about everything we're doing or thinking or saying, and to not allow our inner critic's voice to be the loudest voice. And so within our, in our own heads, nobody knows that this is happening, but to, and this is just an example, but to, as that inner critic is starting to say things like, speed up, what's the matter with you? Come on, move up. That's one that mine says. And then for me, just to breathe and refocus and check in myself and not let that be sort of the loudest voice that's going on. And then that's a boundary that I have with myself, and, you know, talk to clients at times as well about, look, what if we didn't entertain that so much, the inner critic, and stay in that space. So that's another form of a boundary.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And the one, yeah, I've been reminded of, because it's a conversation with one of my friends, Ace, a lot recently. I mentioned his name because he's been on my other podcast, so listeners might know him. But we've been having a shared rant, not so much recently, but in the last few weeks, about people being very unreliable in our friend groups. And it was a trend that both of us were noticing. And I think it speaks to the kind of the overwhelm. It's a time of year where people can be feeling quite depleted and just starting to kind of pull themselves back up energetically after, you know, January, that can be a tricky period, for example. And again, you know, I think there's a real boundary there for ourselves of what things to commit to. You know, that maybe we don't feel kind of able for certain plans, And I may be intuitive enough that I can often tell, but equally, I'm not trying to be the counselor to all my friends. So when they kind of make a plan and then are tricky to kind of pin down about timings and stuff, I can sort of see a bit of a trend there. I'm thinking of a few people in particular where you might think, okay, they're definitely going to try and push that back to later in the day when we get down to it. Or, you know, maybe they're sort of not fully committing because they don't fully feel able for another social commitment this week. And it's not my place to say, are you sure you have the energy for this? Should we do next week? But also, like, it's boundaries for them of what do you commit to? And, you know, there can be that people pleasing, but it actually is more kind and ethical to not overcommit, you know, rather than agreeing something and then cancelling or being really late or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does speak to people struggle to set boundaries. People struggle to say no. And maybe even to know how they might. It's interesting that you had a sense you were headed in that direction with more than one person. But yeah, sometimes people don't even realize until they're right upon it how depleted they are or are so uncomfortable saying no that until they just don't have the energy to do it, they feel like, no, I can do it. I'll say yes to that. And struggling to really honor themselves.
Yeah. And I think there's such power and strength in really owning that, you know, being honest about it. Like I don't, you know, I am feeling overwhelmed this week or work's crazy or whatever, you know, reasoning you're going to give. But I, you know, I still want to see you. Let's just do it next week.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be amazing if more people would be just straight about that kind of stuff. I think that would help all of us because you're really speaking to the other side of that. Then you're having this experience of kind of knowing you're headed in that direction where that person's just not even kind of showing signs that they're not going to be available. And then they're not. And it's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, you're right. It's a very tricky thing. And so could you share a bit of how you identify these areas of energetic clutter with your clients and what kind of tools there can be around identifying, okay, what is an unnecessary stressor in my life? You know, can that be changed? Can there be, or is it that I respond to it in a different way?
Yeah, I think that what happens a lot is a client might be going sort of round and around with a situation that they've been frustrated about. And I'll help them identify, is there something you're trying to learn from this? Is this processing helping you get new information? And that's a very direct conversation that we have about, is there something in there that they're not done yet, not done processing? And so sometimes the answer is yes, and we can try and understand what is so potent about this. Why is this a struggle for you to let go? And then when that's a yes, and it feels like there is something that's very grippy about a situation, and then the person continues to process it, then we try and understand, usually it's a pattern of some sort. So often limiting beliefs can be something that keep us processing things again and again, because there's something that we're holding on to, usually from our childhoods. And I can say a little bit more about what that is, but that we're struggling to let go of. So an example might be limiting beliefs. People struggle with feelings of worth is a common limiting belief that people have for various reasons. Maybe they grew up in a household where love was not expressed very freely, something like that, and where somebody might struggle to believe in their worth. And so their goal is to get kind of hustle for their worth. I've got to do things. And so they might be struggling to let go of this idea that they have to do things to earn their worth. So the processing could be around something like that, something that they're working on letting go of, but they're really struggling to let go of it. And they've got a lot of emotion connected to it. And so it helps us. It helps us identify, oh, what is it about this that's making it hard to let go of? And then when we do peel away those layers and have a better idea of it, it becomes easier to let go of because there is a better understanding of the role that it's taking in somebody's life and what it is. And then when we know that, we can name it more quickly and move towards whatever's next. Yes, it makes sense that this is a little triggering for you to not do some of these things. Yes, I get it. And so that will help to clear out some of that energetic clutter. It doesn't make it go away. There's still that tender spot. And there still is that, let's see, sort of connection to it. Mm-hmm. But when somebody has named it and understood it better, it doesn't have the same holding power. And they can decide, okay, I'm going to not keep focusing on this. Easier said than done, yes. I mean, that takes redirecting again and again our thoughts until it doesn't have that same kind of pull.
Yes, yes. And I love that example as well, because that is one that affects so many people. And, you know, I certainly relate to it personally, and I see that a lot in people around me where there is that real strong feeling that's often backed up by the way kind of our societies function of your purpose is so connected to doing things. Your worth is connected to doing things. And so you, on your own, having a lie-in because you're tired, not acceptable. You're cheating. You know, you having a day off where you don't feel the need to like schedule it like you would a work day of like, okay, I've got a day off, but I've got these 10 chores and I need to put them all in order and make sure I get them all done. Otherwise, I failed at my day off. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that stuff can be so normalized that it takes a lot of unpicking. It took so much unpicking for me. And now it's odd to be the other side of some of that stuff where I'm now more present at times than people know what to do with. You know, I've used my parents as an example before where that, you know, a lot of that mentality came from, you know, the household I grew up in. And that contrast is still very much there today, whether one of them's retired, one of them's semi-retired. And we have it all the time when I see them, but they'll be wanting to talk about, when are we next seeing you? And oh, we've really missed you, to sit there and be really present. And they're already thinking about, okay, have you drunk your coffee? Where are we going to next? They're always go, go, go.
On to the next.
And I'm like, you wanted to, you came to say you missed me. Let's just sit. But I think that's what it is when you're going against the tide and you're being really present with people and not, you know, tying worth to action.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what you mentioned at the beginning of sharing that part and said you did a lot of unpacking to get to that place. And I think that that's what I'm talking about in terms of knowing yourself well. There's a lot of understanding what gets triggered in us. What's that about? What's the old stories that we're holding on to? And if you can really learn about yourself in that way, you can sort of loosen the grip of a lot of these things that can otherwise put us in this automatic pilot experience where we're just sort of on to the next, without even realizing that it's the source of a lot of depletion and frustration for us.
Yeah. And I think that's the right phrase for it, is loosening the grip, because it's still there. You know, like a common experience I have is, my flatmate and I work very different hours. And so sometimes, you know, I come home from work before her and, you know, vice versa. And if I'm the one that's here first and I'm just chilling and I've done all my work for the day, there can be that part of me that's like, oh, is she going to think I've just been sat around all day? And A, why does it matter? B, she doesn't care. C, you know, C, I know I haven't. Like, so there can still be that sort of niggling stuff where I have to spot it and be like, I see you. I'm going to choose not to respond to that, because if I did, it would be circus. It would be me like getting my laptop out and pretending to work or some nonsense to try and ease that feeling.
Yeah. But it really speaks to how entrenched this stuff is. And that if you aren't aware of some of it, it will lead to different behaviors. Like, I can't rest. I can't, you know, those kind of things just feel so uncomfortable for me. And if somebody stops there, it's uncomfortable, so I'm not going to do it. Then they aren't figuring out how to take good care of themselves and how to figure out what they need and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so in terms of your experience with clients then, when you're identifying these things, you're setting boundaries, you're finding, you know, what things can they change and what things can they change their relationship to instead. Could you tell me a bit about the positives there? What is the overall impact on their lives and their mental health?
One client in particular comes to mind who had an issue of overdoing and doing so many things and struggling to really ground herself periodically through her week, through her days. And then alcohol became a way to kind of numb herself, and not doing less, that wasn't first something that was explored. But when alcohol was clearly not something that was going to support her growth, then figuring out how to ground herself and what does that mean and what does a pause look like and starting to create new patterns. And this is just one example, but there's been many themes like this where, and so often it's that automatic pilot, overdoing, and then getting dysregulated from it. And so then instead starting to identify, when do I need to rest? When am I not resting? Why is that? What are some of the messages that I got growing up? And so sometimes it's having grown up in a household with substance abuse, it could be unpredictable. And so there is this push to get really controlled, that kind of thing. So learning those kinds of stories that each person came with and starting to choose for themselves. Oh, yeah, I do too much. And yeah, this is why. And I don't want to keep that pattern going. And it takes some time. It takes some unpacking. It takes some discomfort, because often it's like, oh, I'm going to do that thing because it's the only thing that I feel pulled to do right now. But if somebody can start to create new patterns, simple things, we talk about it a lot in the therapy world, but things like going for walks or breathe, focusing on your breath, that kind of thing, and being able to interrupt some of these patterns so that you can ground yourself and then choose. And I think in doing that, then people can feel so much more in alignment with their lives, and there's a lot more life satisfaction. And the difference is sometimes somewhat subtle. Like sometimes you can't even fully, you're still maybe choosing some of the same things, but doing less so that you're grounded, so that you're choosing it at a time when you're feeling more connected to whatever the activity might be, as opposed to just dumping it all into this life that you're not present in.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I'm not sure if I was answering. The question really is, what are some of the positives? What can somebody get if they're going to actually clear some of their energetic clutter, right? That's
I really appreciate what you shared there. And I think there's clearly so many benefits in what you described. I mean, even the example of like the alcohol is a good one, where that's a crutch that can be very common for people. And although it might help kind of quiet thoughts or sort of make us feel numb in a certain way that we feel we can relax, it's not really genuine. It's a kind of, you know, it's an external thing that's having that feeling, but it's not actually that effect.
Absolutely. And I'm just thinking as you're talking, so alcohol is an example of one, but it could be other things too, like anything distracting, scrolling on your phone, watching TV, something that's numbing you out. And I think what happens is people use some of those things as a way to soothe themselves when they've overdone whatever it is that they're overdoing, they're crashing, and then that's part of how they're dealing with it. But the problem with taking the edge off is that then you're not as motivated to change the way that your life is set up so that you can fully be connected, really enjoy the different parts of your life, get grounded, make some choices, and all of those things. So yeah, it sort of is this fake way of soothing. ourselves, but it doesn't have that full lasting life satisfaction impact that it would if we didn't allow ourselves to have some of those options. So going back to some of those boundaries, it could be saying, oh, I do this thing, like I numb out, or in whatever form I numb out. And so I'm not going to use that as a crutch and start to see, well, what do I need then? If I don't allow that, what do I need then?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, to stretch that metaphor, it's the difference between kind of avoiding, masking, covering up the edge versus, you know, changing it, going to the root. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of the work you do clearly in your therapeutic spaces. And when we talked before, it was all about group therapy. And I know that's still very much the forefront of your work. And so what additional layers does that give of identifying and clearing energetic clutter when it is you in a group therapeutic setting?
Yeah, I think in group settings, one of the things that I love so much about it is that people can really learn about themselves in a way that's hard to do in other settings, because they're getting sort of an inside view to somebody's inner world and often seeing themselves there. So that there is this experience of you're not alone. People are starting to share some of where they go into automatic pilot, some of the limiting beliefs that they're struggling with, some of the patterns that they're struggling to interrupt. And so it helps people, I think, start to be able to do some of those things because they are no longer feeling maybe as flawed. I mean, that was something I know in our last conversation that we had, I talked about my own experiences of feeling flawed when I went into a group situation myself, the one that changed my life. But I know that that realization you're not alone, but starting to see what resonates when you hear other people talk about things, you can get a lot of ahas in that experience of like, oh yes, me too. I totally relate to that. And it's in some of those sort of greater understanding of things that we start to learn more about ourselves. And it's in some of that unpacking, some of the peeling away of those layers that allows us then to choose better for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's so powerful, the having the social context in the room, because something like mm-hmm. practicing boundaries isn't, you know, necessarily something that would come up in one-on-one therapy, because mm-hmm. in many ways, the therapist is taking on that responsibility.
It can be something that gets practiced, it gets talked about, and people can really connect to each other through the difficulty of that process and how they can start to have some accountability towards some of the things that they do want to practice in their lives. So it's kind of like this, we're with you, we're this team. And then as somebody goes out there in the world and they are trying those things, new things that have been discussed, I think that there's a real awareness that their people are supporting them, even though their people are in the group and they would see them another time. But there is something so helpful about knowing that you really aren't alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And actually, after our last conversation, I did look into options for myself. And since finishing up on one-to-one therapy, it is something that I think at some point I will circle back on. The city centre in Dublin, there's a specialist organization that does group therapy that looks really good. There's a few options, but there's one that I've really kind of narrowed in on. It's still very much on my radar to get some of these benefits for myself. And yeah. So as we start to wrap up then, would you mind sharing anything that you're working on lately for yourself in terms of clearing energetic clutter?
Oh, yeah. You mean my personal, on myself?
Yeah.
Yeah. The one that I've been working on a lot really is related to work. And I think I offered this voice a little bit when I was mentioning the inner critic. So I have a tendency when I'm I've got my goals, my work goals, and all the things that I want to focus on. I get very impatient with myself, with my pace. I feel like I should be faster. I feel like I should already be focusing on something different. No matter what I'm focusing on, I get impatient with myself. And recognizing that pattern has been something that I've been calling out for myself, and realizing that it's that frenzied pace that does not serve me. And it's not true. Like, it's, I'm impatient with my speed the second I start something. So how could it actually be about my speed? So it's really noticing, oh, I've got this impatience. I had this limiting belief that the only way to reach my career goals that I have is that I have to scramble, that working at a comfortable pace just wouldn't get me there. And I've been challenging that. And so for me, it's catching that limiting belief, breathing into it, and then coming back to my pace and being okay about, I am just going to do what I'm doing now and do it at my pace, and really honoring that and letting that guide me and lead me. So that's what I've been working on for a number of months now, but it's changed a lot of things. And that was part of the beginning of this work, clearing energetic clutter. That was part of when I worked with the minimalist that I got clear about, was how impatient with myself I would get. And so I'm working on that.
I love that. It's a good one, and I'm sure it's one that comes back to your clients all the time, where you wouldn't, you know, feel that need to rush them in that process of working on themselves.
That's right.
You'd hardly, as a therapist, be there and saying, you've not fixed everything suddenly, you're a bad client. Of course you wouldn't. I think that's a really good one to be reflecting on for all of us. And so we will wrap up on that note. If people want to find your work, I know you're very active on social media, you do a lot of podcasts, and you also do discovery sessions as well, right?
I do. Probably the easiest way to find me, and I've made it very simple on my website, and then it can connect you to all the different things that I do, but it's clearenergeticclutter.com.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. The branding. The branding is always great with you. And we'll wrap up there then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.